Hi, welcome to my 19th diary entry. Today is interesting. Good though. I was so dead. Like last night, yesterday I had my vaccine. Last night I felt very sore and kind of like just uncomfortable. And then I slept kind of late. Finally, when I woke up, I felt so exhausted. Like I was just so drained, kind of dizzy, like definitely felt not like sick necessarily, but like a foggy brain from the vaccine. Like it was just not feeling good. So I ended up sleeping more, and thank goodness I did, because I think I would have been just out of it times 10 today. And then I ended up going to the gym for a little bit because I was like, I just want to try to like exercise a little. And it was fine, but there was definitely a point where I was like, okay, this is enough. I'm not in the full state of mind and physical state to do this. So I went home. And then when I got home, I actually have I had an interview, like I interviewed somebody for a school project for my law class, and it was a defense lawyer from Toronto that I interviewed that I wanted to include, and he was such a nice guy. He was very helpful, gave me really good insight into what I was looking for, and yeah, but like he, you know, at the end of the conversation, he was giving me some advice about career stuff, and he was saying like, you know, that that would be good to do is to like find what you're really, really interested and become like the side of journalism that you're really, really interested in, and become super, super well informed to the point where you are almost like an expert, or you feel so comfortable just so that then that way you can be like almost like a go-to person in that side of the field, like whether that's science journalism or fashion journalism or whatever. And that was kind of cool to hear that. It kind of made me think just more about my place in my future career. So that was nice. It was very helpful. But it also made me think about people fighting for those who aren't necessarily deemed by society to be quote unquote good. Obviously, as a defense lawyer, he was a criminal defense lawyer. He deals with people who many would consider to be criminals, who are charged with criminal crimes, and who aren't the best people. Like, I would never personally be a defense lawyer. I feel like I would not want to put myself in that position. But the way he was explaining it, and what made him want to, he was just always passionate about this type of law. So for him, it was like the perfect fit. And you know what? You know, many people feel that way as well, right? So it made me think about history of like, what, like, you know, kind of people advocating for those who are not necessarily seen in the best light. Obviously, they're not necessarily criminals in history that I'm talking about. That was just kind of like the conversation I had with him, and just hearing about his career was kind of just something that inspired me to think about this stuff. But there's one specific person that I really want to talk about, and his story and his legacy that follows, and how some people are kind of pushing against it. So the person I want to talk about is actually Richard III. He was a king in England, King Richard III. And he was born in 1452, and he was the King of England and the Lord of Ireland. Actually, that's his official title, I guess, until 1485. He was the last king from the House of York, so none of the monarchs now, like, and after him, were descendants of him. It's not like the Queen of England now, Queen Elizabeth, is his descendant. He was from a different house, a different line. And he was defeated in battle at Bosworth Field. And it was the War of the Roses, the last battle of the War of the Roses. And it was the end of the Middle Ages in England. So he has not the best reputation now in history, like when you think back at him. And one of the reasons is because of Shakespeare's play called Richard III, where he was kind of a tyrant, I believe. That's the idea that I got from it. I never actually watched or listened to or read Richard III from Shakespeare. And it's interesting because I covered Shakespeare before a little bit, but in this case, like, I want to talk about a specific group called the Richard III Society. And apparently, it's a society or organization that has been running since 1924. And their whole thing is that they believe that Richard III was actually a good guy, and that a lot of the things that were said about him, following Shakespeare's play and just passed on throughout history, was just not true or blown out of proportion, or he was very villainized. It's almost like propaganda. And that he's actually was a good king, and he actually was brave and kind, or kind for, a king. One of the reasons why, one of the bad stories that he's known for, and this is, I think, in the play Richard III, which is why he's known in a bad way, was I think he killed his two younger, I think, nephews. I don't know, but that there was two. Let me just read this, because I don't know why I'm trying to say this. Rain. Well, basically, okay, I don't even want to try to find this right now, but basically he killed two of his younger, I think it was nephews, who could have taken on the throne. He was a just more violent. He's portrayed as more violent, like a tyrant. He did anything to get the throne, etc. So this organization really focuses on trying to make him have a better be seen in a better light. And people are just really into this. It kind of blows my mind, I'm not gonna lie, that this is an international thing, because now it's online, you can join the membership, and there's a shop on there, and all these things you can connect with different people. But it's just crazy to think how like so many people around the world from since the 1920s just really care so much about Richard III and how he's seen in his history and stuff. I kind of get it and I kind of don't. But not only that, though, they've gone to great lengths to prove that he was actually a good guy, or that he was seen in more negative light than he really was in real life. And one of the things, so I watched a documentary today called Richard III, The King in the Car Park. And it was really interesting because it was basically about this woman who's from the Richard III Society, who really believes that the narrative that he's a good guy, is she did a lot of research, all kinds of things, and figured out where she believes Richard III was buried, because nobody could find him. He died in battle, but it wasn't because he was killed in battle, and he wasn't buried in the royal whatever king thing. They just didn't know where his body was. They didn't know. They had vaguely ideas here and there over time, but she finally found where it could be, and it ended up actually being under a parking lot in England. And so she got all this permission from people. She worked with the University of Leicester. I don't want to mispronounce it, but I'm sorry. She worked with the university, and they ended up getting the okay to excavate that parking lot, and look with archaeologists and stuff, and look for a grave. And they found one, and he literally ended up having almost all of the traits, pretty much all of the traits that Richard III would have. They did some testing to figure out what time period he'd be from. It was the correct time period, the skeleton would be from, it was the correct time period. They did, they looked at his spine and his posture. Apparently Richard III was known for having a hunchback or bad posture. And he did have scoliosis, and you could see it in the skeleton. So that was correct. He had certain wounds that were done, that were in his, you could see in the skeleton, that were definitely from war or weapons kind of wounds, like a knife hits on his skull and on his body. He was a man, and they kind of did that recreation. They take a skull and they make a recreation of their face on a computer. They did that. He looked like Richard III from the painting. He basically was, and this is actually really crazy. There was a geneticist, actually, who was Canadian. His name is Turi King. And he linked some people to the 15th century monarch, to Richard III. So a man named Michael Ibsen, and there's like a handful of other people, have the same DNA as Richard III. He did all kinds of tests and stuff and found this out. And Michael Ibsen is actually Canadian, and he's 17th generation nephew of Richard III, and he lives in Canada, which is wild. He's like a carpenter, I think. But yeah, he has actual DNA connection to him. So they also took DNA from the skull and the bones and Michael Ibsen's DNA, and it was a match. So, you know, it's just wild to think that all of this stuff had happened. And when you watch a documentary, it's really interesting to see their process, how they found everything and all that stuff. But I want to talk about the society itself, or just like the idea of the society. And like, obviously, you know, there's a lot of things in history that we don't know. There's a lot of people that have certain reputations that might be false or exaggerated because of propaganda, really, from like other generations that followed, that wanted to paint a certain portrait of whoever that is. Two, it's because people are genuinely like, they didn't have you know, they couldn't record videos, or some people couldn't read or write or whatever. And what would happen would be is that I would tell a story to my friend, and my friend would tell a story to this other person, and this other person would tell a story to another person, and all of these stories ended up kind of slightly changing. It's like broken telephone. And so they would also get blown out of proportion, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's how we know a lot of stories now, is because of that being passed on of word of mouth. But then the problem is that the word of mouth ends up being kind of all over the place sometimes. So really, like, history, it going, you know, back can just be a mess sometimes, or can just be confusing, because sometimes there's one person saying one thing, another person saying another thing. And when it comes to people who are like kings and queens, there's obviously a lot of people who don't like them. You know, like, if you're a king and you're all powerful and blah blah blah, there's going to be people who are going to want to attack you, even attack your reputation, because they just are jealous or want your power, or maybe don't like your policies or whatever. So yeah, that said, it's wild to think, in my opinion, that there's a whole society since the 20s that has been focused on changing the narrative of somebody who would be known as a tyrant. It's almost like somebody, like, let's say there's a tyrant now happening, or like, let me think. I don't want to use anybody's name, but like, let's say there's like a tyrant that's a really famous tyrant, and then 100, 200, 300 years later, or whatever time frame, 500 years later, yeah, it was 500 years ago, people were like, hey, you know what, actually, that tyrant that people were talking about for so long and said he was the worst, maybe he's not that bad. Maybe he's actually fine. Maybe that was a lie. And I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know Richard III personally. I don't know even all the research done by the society, but it's just interesting for me to think that people have this urge, I guess, or this perspective of, you know, looking at somebody, kind of playing devil's advocate in a sense, like looking at somebody who was known for a certain behavior and trying to shift that narrative. And I'm wondering why, because like, is it just like you want, like, you know, that story of like the villain turned good, like, is that kind of like something that you know, you feel like he's misunderstood or something? Is that something that feels good for people to reclaim? You know what I mean? Like his reputation just makes people feel better about the history. Is it because you genuinely believe it in your whole soul, that you've done all the research and you're like, you know what, this is wrong? Like, I want to know where that stems from, because even the woman who was in that documentary, she was like leading the whole, you know, quest to figure out if that grave was him or not. She was so emotionally connected to him and the story. Like, she got emotional many times. She was crying many times. She felt very like she knew him, as if she knew him. And again, it's interesting to see that like people have such a strong urge to connect to others, even if it's hundreds of years ago, and to almost like have this extreme loyalty to certain people who have who even have been accused of mess up things. I don't really have much to say about it. It's not like I'm an expert here. I have no, again, conclusion of like, this is why people do this or whatever. It's just wild to think of. Like, I watched this documentary and then I also talked to a defense lawyer today. And the defense lawyer is very different to this type of society. Obviously, he's not sitting here advocating for people who are, you know, criminals. It's his job for them to pay him to help them legally. So it's a different thing completely, for sure. But just the concept of somebody taking a stance in some way, I don't know if that really applies to the lawyer part, but taking a stance in some way to try to prove that somebody wasn't the way they are or isn't as bad as they are said to be or whatever that is, it's just interesting to me. I don't really have, like I said, I don't really have a conclusion. I'm just like, huh, like, I guess as humans, we look for the best in people, or we hope the people were better, or we hope that, or we want to help people that are treated in an unjust way, or we feel connected to others, or maybe we get paid for it. You know, it's like a job thing. Whatever the case is, it's just, I don't know, see, that perspective, it's kind of like a theme in my head today, like the perspective of like people being an advocate of some sort for people who many considered quote-unquote bad or criminal or tyrants or whatever, you know. So that's just my thoughts for the day.